Good morning. This podcast is brought to you by HTS. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. HTS specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit them at htsav.net. 3, 2, 1, good morning.
Good morning.
Reading that, I feel, sitting with you, I feel like I should have that memorized. Because you are a man of memorizing.
That's all right. Yeah, I'm a man of memorizing. That's true. That's an occupational requirement.
Well, good morning, James.
Good morning, Tommy.
My bestest of best friends.
My bestest of best buddies.
I'm glad that we could sit down on this awesome Christmas Eve and have a nice chat with your Christmas shirt.
Yeah, I got my Christmas shirt on. I wore the red.
You're feeling very festive.
You got your Hanukkah shirt on. You got the blue.
Is that what Hanukkah is, blue?
I don't know. I'm just trying to be there for you.
I like to do podcasts and learn things. I might have learned something.
I always think of the blue and silver as being more connected to Hanukkah. Maybe I'm wrong about that, yeah. I could be wrong about that.
What's that candle?
The menorah?
The menorah.
Yeah. Menorah.
Menorah, sorry. No disrespect.
Don't offend.
Don't let me talk about things I don't know anything about, like menorah.
And we're done.
And we're done. So listen, it is Christmas Eve. I just saw you, when did I see you?
Yesterday.
We ran
with Brian.
I think if people know anything about you and I, that we do a lot of running together.
We do, and we have for quite some time.
Tiffany called me this morning. She's like, I was thinking about maybe joining you guys on a run. You have a whole crew now.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's like Forrest Gump. You just start running.
Everybody's following you.
Well, and I think at our age, I was surprised when you're 59.
I am.
I thought for some reason you had cracked over to the big 6-0.
No, that's because I was whining about it probably, about it coming up. That's probably what made you think I was already there.
Well,
my wife always gets on me too about that. She's like, you're not there yet. Stop it.
It's
just mortality breathing on the back of my neck.
Isn't that
though.
Weird? Because for a while I was telling everybody I was 52 and I hadn't had my birthday yet.
Yeah.
Like I was adding a year, like I was.
I know, I do. That's what I was doing. I'm not 60 till next July.
I'm like, look how awesome I am for 52. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even 52, and I'm not even that awesome. I guess it's this thing I work out of my head. As you're young, you don't want to be old, and as we get older, you want to be old and awesome.
Mostly just want people looking at you. Just there look at me.
Well, we have run. I was telling somebody the other day that I started running in 1997. And I remember running, I was going to school, and I remember going and running on a treadmill and then getting in my car and having a cigarette.
Oh, I remember that. I remember running on a trail in Newark, and I was a few years sober, and I used to run 3 miles on the trail, hack my head off, and then light up a cigarette in the car and smoke it on the way back, and cough the whole way.
Yeah. Well, and
which is the definition of addiction to me.
Or stupidity, I'm not sure.
Well, you know, there's not far apart, I guess.
Right. Well, the funny thing is, and I've said this and you said this, at some point we wanted to run more than we wanted to smoke.
Yeah. I ran only one marathon in my life. When I was running the marathon very, very slowly, I got talking to this guy. His name was Herb. I guess it was short for Urban. But he'd been a smoker at one point, and we were just chatting on the, because neither of us was fast, we were chatting on the marathon, and I was telling him that I had quit smoking the year before, and you know, I said for years I couldn't quit, and I kept saying to people, as soon as I quit smoking, I'll get back into shape. And that was a lie on two levels. On one, first, I had never been in shape. I'd smoked since I was 15, so I'd never fully been in shape anyway.
Right.
You know, and then I couldn't quit.
Right.
So at one point it just got so bad that I just like, well, I can't quit, but I can start exercising. So I started running while I was still smoking. And he said to me a thing that I think is true. He said, eventually an exercised body will not smoke.
Right.
And I think that's right.
Well, and I
for me it was anyway.
Well, and I think it was the same way for me. I really, you know, I got into me early, so doing what me wanted.
Yeah.
And me, meaning like, you know, hanging out, doing my drinking, my smoking, you know, running the streets. And I love that. But in the back of my mind, I'd always had wished that maybe I had been more into sports. I mean, I played sports as a kid, you know, Little League and early soccer and basketball, but never really, was never really my thing, but always had that regret. So as I got older, I was like, there is one thing that I could do, and that's run. And I've any time I would see somebody running, I'd be like, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
And at that point, I couldn't really run to the end of the driveway.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first night I ran, I had basketball shoes on. It was on Lewis Beach, and I couldn't go a quarter mile before stopping. I was just like, I was shot, but I was out there. And my wife says, she remembers my doing it. She's like, you know, and it was a crisis moment. Like, I really needed to change my life.
Pull this up just a little bit.
Okay.
There you go.
I really needed to change my life. But I remember she said to me later, she's like, you know, when you went out there, and it was like winter on Lewis Beach, it was windy and stuff, you know, and I'm out there in sweatpants and basketball shoes running. And she's like, oh, what new thing is this? You know, she was just like, how's this going to go? But I actually ended up, that was the start. I ended up staying with it.
Well, and you know, to kind of wrap up the story was, you know, that's when you and I, that my running kind of began. I got sober early in 97, and that's when I started to want to make some changes in my life. And I'd kind of bounced along the bottom for so long that I was just like, I'm just tired of this. I just want to improve something. And one of the big things, as soon as I quit drinking, the cigarettes were soon to follow. And I'm like, yeah, I just got to get rid of all this stuff. And I just wanted to be better. And for some reason, I tagged running as the solution that was going to solve everything. And it doesn't. But
yeah,
I'm glad that the opportunity arose. And I took it, because the point of that whole thing is that you and I have been basically running together since really almost like 1999.
Right. And we used to be running from stuff, but now I feel like we run towards stuff.
Well, and I just, first of all, I just want to say thanks.
Yeah, same to you, man.
I mean, that is almost 21 years.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to have, too. It's one of those things where, and we usually run, in, like, you know, when I'm not away acting or something,
right,
we run once a week at least. And it's a sunrise run, because you're an early riser, more than I am. I mean, I'll get up and meet you.
Well, you know,
that sunrise run is awesome. Like, that, it reminds you.
It's special.
It's special. It reminds you of the day. It reminds you of the present. It reminds you of what's important. We've had great conversations and
we've worked some stuff out on the trail. I remember when you and I forget what we got in a fight about.
Out in Gordon's Pond?
Yeah, Gordon's Pond. And I said, fuck you, and took off running.
That's because I think I had said that to you.
You probably said the same thing.
And prior to that.
But, you know, there's a lot of lessons to be learned. Yeah. In,
The little ego rubbing, you know, like rubbed up against somebody's ego, I think is what happened, you know.
Well, so, but, you
some
know,
truth got spoken, and the other person wasn't ready to have truth spoken. I don't know, and I think that was my it went my way that time. You said some truth to me, and I was like, not ready to hear it. So I laid into you, and then you were like, all right, I don't need that.
Well,
then you waited for me down the road, as I recall.
Well, and I didn't wait. I turned back.
Yeah, yeah.
And because one of the things that happens, and I say this to a lot of people, you know, I don't feel like I'm living unless I'm suffering. And people are like, oh my God, that is like deep. Like that hit, like it's a pre-existing condition, that word suffer.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like I got hit by a car and I'm laying in a ditch suffering. I mean like, it's a grind, and self usually disappears. And I remember that moment when I said, you know what, go to hell, and I took off running. Mm-hmm. And I got to a certain point, and I said, okay, stop. This is silly. Let's go back. Where I'm not sure. I think I'm at a place I probably would have gone back. But I think the running kind of grinded away the self side of me and said, listen, this is silly. You don't leave your boy behind. Because we've always said that. We've always committed that to each other. We won't leave each other. If someone can't make it, we'll just walk together.
Yeah.
And so
somebody's got an appointment or something, then we're cool with it too.
You right.
know, I'm like, yeah, go ahead.
But we have a pre-written kind of thing for us, is that we don't leave each other behind. So I stopped and I went back and I said, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that was dumb, whatever. I don't even remember why we were arguing.
I think we both apologized. It was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think it just needs to happen between friends every now and then, too. You know, you get impatient and, you know, you'll release it, you clear the air, and you move on.
Well, I think that there's, you know, and we've talked about being sober, and I got this, someone posted, you know, so yesterday was my anniversary, which was funny because I can't remember, I think it's 11 years. I think it's 12 years.
Yeah.
But my wife's like, I think it's 11. And I saw somebody that said, I saw him last year and he said I was celebrating 10, so that would make it 11. But then I saw a picture posted yesterday that came up in my timeline
mm-hmm.
from 7 years ago with the 5-year coin.
Yeah.
So I'm like, But I'm going to go with 11.
Yeah. What does it matter, finally?
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what I was telling Christina. I go, I just got today. That's all I care about. But somebody posted some, I thought this was a great coin. And I don't know if you've ever seen the coin, but
I can't really see what it says.
It basically is just the 12 steps.
Because we're socially distanced properly, as we should be.
Absolutely. But step one is acceptance. Step two is faith. And step three is surrender. Mm-hmm. And to me, that word surrender is like, it is the key really for me to be happy today, you know? And, you know, I've always thought if I have one foot in what I used to be and one foot in what I want to be, you know, I'm missing everything in between.
Yeah.
And at some point I had to give it up and say, you know, because if maybe prior to that, I'd have said, you know what, I'm right. He's wrong. I'm going to keep on running. And at some point I said, it doesn't matter. Just like how much time I have, it doesn't matter. Go back. Let's not spend any time fighting. I surrender. I give up.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big key word, a big step for me, at least in my life, because I don't want to spend time fighting with, like, my best friend.
Right. But, I mean, the other situations come up, though, you know, and we've had this with friends. I've got it with family right now where there's a division that I don't even understand, you know, with a sibling of mine. And I've tried to repair it, like I've made gestures, but I've gotten absolutely no response. And I have no, I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with me because I can't think of anything that I've done.
Right.
You know, but it's just no response coming back. And there comes a point at which, you know, and I've gone after it a number of times and I've talked, you know, with people about it and people I trust. And, you know, I've just come to a point where, like, well, now it's the ball's in the other person's court.
Right.
Like, I got nothing. I have no information to go on. And after a while, it becomes kind of self-abusive, you know. So there is a line, too, you know. I mean, that instance between us was, you know, it's just a goofy instance between friends. And it was fleeting. And, you know, you take care of those things quickly, I think, if you're, you know, if you're at a stage where I feel like you and I are, where, you know, where we sort of police our behavior on a regular basis because we know that that's where sanity lies and that's where happiness lies.
Right.
You know, that we got to check on ourselves and say, you know, what's my part in this?
Yep.
But once I've done that checking and the situation still exists, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I just got to let it go.
Yeah.
I got to let it go and I got to go ahead and move forward and trust that if it's supposed to work out, it'll work out. But, and that's hard for me. You know, I want to get in there and meddle.
Because you want to fix whatever I've done.
Well, it's also because I feel threatened. I feel uncomfortable. I feel like maybe there's some chance that it was me. Because in the past, it was me a lot of the time, and I didn't even own it or didn't even think about it. I was, you know, thoughtless.
Right.
And so now I want to make sure I'm not that. And so I can't, you know, it's like a scab, you know. I can't leave it alone, you know, well, or bad tooth.
It's one of the things with sobriety, right? I mean, we learned that. I mean, this is the kind of thing that could maybe lead somebody to possibly consider, you know, enjoying some spiked eggnog if there's this turmoil in our lives that we can't fix.
Yeah.
You know, and so that we try to learn, listen, we try to clean it up. We, you know, we eat that humble pie.
Right.
You know, best served warm.
Right.
And we get it cleaned up and we move on, because I know for me as a person that doesn't do drugs and alcohol and tries to live a sober life, I struggle ending the day with my side of the street not being clean.
Right. And we know it doesn't have to be that. I mean, it doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. There are other behaviors that you can pick up. And, you know,
well, those are just the two I'm free of.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, no, I mean, but there are other indulgent behaviors that take us farther away from being, you know, what I think of as my best self, you know, and not that it's a perfect self by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, and I've always said the problem with donuts is they don't get us put in jail.
Good point.
Good point.
Good point. Yes.
Because.
Yes, I've bought too many cartons of eggnog, this, you know, non-alcoholic eggnog.
Of course.
This season, I'm obsessed with eggnog right now.
Eggnog's always non-alcoholic. It's what we add to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, a lot of people, when they talk about eggnog, they're talking about the spiked version, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think you can buy alcohol-laced eggnog.
I don't think that would work.
No.
No. I don't think it would hold up.
It'd probably separate in the bottle.
Yeah, it probably would. Probably would.
It'd be like whipping cream. I just take it, and then I just sip off the top half, and then I leave the eggnog.
That's how I would roll.
I would roll. Well, I love the fact that you and I run, and there's a lot of lessons for me that that I've learned through running about me and about my spirituality and about self and about surrendering. And it's almost like a little miracle really for me, because it's almost like lessons you can't teach somebody. Yeah. Like I couldn't say, listen, man, this is what goes on. Be like, yeah, whatever. Like I always use that bridge as an example. If you and I took a couple sleeping bags and just slept on that bridge, and the sun came up and we looked up and stood over the rail, and we'd say, yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah.
But when we run to that bridge.
Yeah, you've invested something to get there.
We suffered a little, right? Yeah. It sucked a little. And we get to the bridge and it's beautiful, right. But I feel like I am like capable of like doing anything in the day.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a lot to that. You know, it's like that idea. I don't know if you saw that book a few years ago called Grit, you know, and it's about this kind of mindset, you know, that and like Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, is interviewed in it because he really sells this idea of grit. And it's about, you know, doing the smaller, uncomfortable things when it doesn't work right away, hanging in there
right.
and staying with it, because that's where the rewards are. That's where you get tougher, where you get insight, where you see that sunrise and it means a lot to you, you know, or you get that great photo. Like how many times are we out there, you know, we just see things and it's like people later on we post it and people are like, that photos. And I'm like, you should have been there for the thing. And never mind
people
the photo.
Say, you're an amazing photographer. I go, no, I think we're just the only two idiots out there at 5:30 in the morning. It's amazing what happens when the sun comes
up.
It's
true.
It is a...
you just got to be there.
You just got to be there. And we have seen some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And it is interesting.
And simple stuff.
And simple stuff.
Simple stuff, but it's amazing. Yeah.
Well, I was talking to a lady the other day about... She was saying that she had a peregrine falcon in her yard. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe a Cooper hawk? A peregrine? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I've seen one here. I'm sure.
It's hard to differentiate. I mean, you know, they're...
Well, I think the peregrine's a little more silvery. I think
so too.
But
yeah, I think
doesn't
right.
matter. But the point is that I mean, the birds.
There are
you
more
see,
Cooper's hawks around here, but
yeah, and I think I learned that from you actually. Yeah. But I can remember one day just running down the trail and seeing a big golden hawk up in the tree. Is that what that one is? The gold?
It might have been a red tail. They look kind of gold.
Red tail. That's
red
it.
Tail or red shoulder.
I get
come
the,
through
the
here
red
too.
Tail hawk and the golden eagle confused. Yeah. I have never seen a golden eagle.
No, you're not going to see one around here, and they're huge.
They're huge.
Yeah.
But this red tail hawk was. Huge as well.
But there's more American eagles around here than ever before. I think it's because of all the building that's been
going
on.
Is that the bald eagle?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think because of all the clearing of forest that's happening for all these new housing developments that are going in. I think maybe, you know, where those American bald eagles have been a little more hidden before because they've had more forest to be in.
Yeah.
I've seen them more, much more frequently in the last couple of years than I had before, you know.
Well, if you take 16 out through Milton and then make that left at the liquor store, mm-hmm. I don't know the name of the road, but if you drive down that
Route 30.
Route 30, all along that. And you can, especially like the first two fields to the left, I've gone out there and flown my drone around six or seven bald eagles. They all set out on the irrigation systems, and I was wondering if maybe there are mice out there or some sort of.
I saw. It's funny. I was coming down Route 9 yesterday. My wife and I were going to the grocery store just then, and I happened to look off to my left, right by Nassau Orchards, and off one of the wires, I'm pretty sure it was a Cooper's hawk. It dropped on something. Like,
nice.
I couldn't see what it dropped on, but it had the talons bared, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was going in for a strike, and I just happened to catch it. And I'd seen that on video, you know, but I'd never actually seen it in real life before, seeing that kind of, you know, that pose for striking the thing. Yeah, going in for a vole or a mouse or something on the ground, you know, it was awesome, you know.
Well, it is.
And we saw that owl yesterday morning, that great horned owl, and
great
heard him.
Horned owl. That was actually really cool.
That was really cool because we heard him and we were talking about it, and then we come up and you're taking a picture of him standing on that post.
Well, and could there be a better post? I mean,
no, hunting wise, he's right out there in the open. He's got a view of everything on the canal.
Well, and we've run by that. I mean, woodpeckers worked that thing over. Owls set up on the thing. Yeah. Buzzards. I mean, there's a whole
ospreys we see.
Osprey,
out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're really blessed, and I know that.
Oh man, that every time we're out on that trail, I feel like we're so lucky. Well, and we've said it when we've been out on Gordon's Pond Trail too, how lucky we are to live where we do.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things about this whole COVID adventure is that I think it's getting people to, you know, I mean, over the last 3 years, I would say we've been working on the Rails to Trails project, where they've basically tried to change basically all the old railroads
yeah.
to trails. And so, you know, they started that project, and then now, you know, the COVID thing, so a lot more people are out riding bikes and running, and we're lucky, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We're really blessed. And then how'd you like our summer run on the beach?
I liked that a lot.
I did too.
I mean, it was a nice change, and there's nothing quite like watching the sunrise on the beach.
No.
I mean, you know, I took, you know, like little 3-minute videos of it coming up over the horizon line, and it's... with the tide, the sound of the tide, like I posted a couple of them, and it's like your zen for the day. That's you could just beautiful. Watch that on a loop and meditate, and yeah, and the really surprising thing, you know, when we were out there is, you know, I mean, by the time we got back to the boardwalk, there were some people out, but they were sort of out after the thing had happened.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
And like but we did used to see some people out there at sunrise too. Not that many, but.
There's some committed folks.
Now there's like nobody on the trail, you know.
No.
I mean, it's like cold. People are like, nope, not doing that. But,
yeah.
You know, I've never found the cold. I kind of like it, actually, I guess.
I love the cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, work out in it, but I do love getting up at 5 in the morning and running in the freezing cold. You know, people say, isn't it too cold? And I can only remember maybe a couple of times where I've really run and gone, this is really cold.
And that was because of wind.
It was because of wind. And it's usually coming from the trail back up to the house.
And with the wind, it was like 10 degrees those days.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
And it hurts your face.
Hurts your face. And we were like, wow. Because we went and it was below 20, but we'd run that before. But then with the wind, you're like, oh, yeah, that's
a
thing.
Oh, putting my hand up to try to block the wind on my face.
Oh, yeah.
But we've shown up, I mean, ice in our mustaches.
Yeah.
I love opening my coat. There's something kind of cool about opening your coat and the inside full of ice crystals.
Yeah, feeling it sort of crack as you open it.
That's kind of a different level.
It is a different level.
You know, your shoulders will pop back for the day a little.
It's true. It's true.
Man,
you get to call everybody else Cupcake. How you doing, Cupcake? That's what my sister-in-law says. You know, she does something tough. She's like, yeah, I can call everybody Cupcake the rest of the day.
Well, I think by the end of the day, or by the end of the run, we've lost that desire to hurt people's feelings.
To lord it over people, yes.
Yes.
Hopefully. Hopefully we're in
a silent victory.
A humbler, more zen place than that.
So what else is going on? I know that you just mentioned a little bit about going away and doing some acting. I know that it's not really the right environment for doing that right now, but... is that something that's still on your radar eventually?
Yeah, it's on my radar. You know, I've enjoyed being home, and my work at the university has been requiring a lot more time and investment because of all the, you know, online approach and everything like that. So that's been a little different, you know. We're going to be online again next semester, so there's just a lot of prep for that. But I am trying to do little acting gigs in between. The Lewis Library, there's a guy over there, Dave White, who got me, you know, I'd done a couple of lectures over there as part of their Shakespeare Festival because I've performed in a lot of Shakespeare and I teach Shakespeare. And he was great because he'd worked in theater in Denver for a long time and moved to this area, and he's working with the library, and he wanted to do sort of... events for the, you know, for the library clientele that would be a little bit different and maybe like offer works in progress. And for a long time I've been thinking about maybe writing plays or writing at least one man performance pieces. And so I did a workshop of one of those a couple of months ago. And it was great because it was a workshop performance. So it just meant that the work was in progress. You know, it's just a draft. So I was performing it with the script in hand, and it was over Zoom, but there was an audience of about 60 people, and then there was a Q&A session afterwards, and people asked questions, and, you know, we had conversations about it. It was really helpful. The piece itself is about an ancient Roman poet named Ovid, and Augustus Caesar banished him at one point to this small town on the coast of the Black Sea. It's the city of Constanta, Romania, is there now. But he never got home. He wrote all these letters in verse and everything, trying to get back home and trying to get pardoned. And and it never worked out. And I've always been fascinated with that part of his life, like why that happened. And nobody's entirely sure about why it happened. No scholar actually knows.
Right.
So it leaves the ground pretty open. So that was the piece. I'm just sort of trying to explore that. And it was fun. And, you know, I've got a lot of work to do on it still. So and the guy at, you know, Dave at Lewis Library is interested in continuing with it. So that's fun, you know, working on something like that. And then we're doing a Falstaff piece. Falstaff is a character from Shakespeare who he's a great drunken reprobate, and he's a terrific character. And I've played him in all of the plays that he's in Shakespeare. There's three plays in which he appears. And so there's this kind of piece that somebody else wrote from Shakespeare's work, kind of reduced it and shifted stuff around. So we're going to try that.
Is that the one, I don't know, remember when we used to do the, every once in a while, I'd have you on my vlog, and you'd recite Shakespeare on our runs?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever done
Well, you did the one, the drunken guy.
Oh, yeah, the
I don't know if he was drunken or...
He's talking about how good wine is?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the guy.
I didn't ask you if you would do any Shakespeare today, so yeah. I don't want to put you against the...
He says, a good sherry sack hath a twofold operation in it. It ascends me into the brain, dries me there all the foolish, dull, and cruddy vapors that environ it, makes it apprehensive, quick, forgetive, full of nimble, fiery, and delectable shapes, which delivered over to the tongue, the voice, which is the birth, becomes excellent wit. The second property of your excellent sherry is the warming of the blood, which before, cold and settled, left the liver white and pale, which is the badge of pusillanimity and cowardice. But the sherry warms it, makes it rush from the innards to the parts extremes. It illumineth the face, where, and as a beacon gives... I've lost it now. Gives light to this little kingdom. Man, I screwed it up.
I'm sorry.
Well, right. No, that's all right. I was just a little on the spot. So
that was a little on the spot, and I apologize.
Yeah, no. And I didn't do it like... I should probably do it full on.
Yeah, from the
standing position. But yeah.
Well, I've always admired you for your. And actually, people, he does actually nail that. Because we've done
just
a
not.
Lot.
Not in that time.
Not this morning. But it's I've always admired, first of all, that you can remember all that stuff. Because to me, I just had to read that ad. I can't remember anything. And then I think, well, maybe you just enjoy the story. Maybe you enjoy, if you know what the story's about, maybe it's easier to memorize it.
Well, I mean, there's roles I've played like that are great roles, you know, that I don't remember any of.
Okay.
And there's others that I've played more than once, so I remember them better. There's some that I just adore, so I you know, I had long drives when I was driving. You can listen to music and podcasts and books on tape just so much, and you know, so at other points I just go over things to see if I still remember, just kind of like a game.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's plays that I have both performed in and then taught for years too. So, you know, wanting to teach it in class, you know, it's a different thing.
It's
great to have that at your fingertips, because if you're in a class full of students and they've got the book open and you just start, just start speaking the speech, you know, that they're looking at on the page and you're not looking at anything, that's a way to capture their attention.
Right.
You know, certainly.
Well, what was the play you did down in Rehoboth with the, when you sang the song, you know, telephone wire.
Oh, yeah. That was
our family. Fun home.
Yeah, fun home.
That was so good. And I'll never forget, because I started crying.
Yeah.
I'm like,
no, it's a touching story of, you know, a painful story of a daughter wanting to come out and her father unable to come out as gay. And it was originally a graphic novel, you know.
Graphic novel.
By
What's
Alison,
that mean?
Alison Bechdel. Well, it's like a novel-length comic book, you know.
Okay.
She wrote it as like
a graphic novel.
Yeah, it had pictures. Okay. She was a cartoonist, or she is a cartoonist, I should say, Alison Bechdel. And she's... And she wrote this graphic novel called Fun Home, which is a play on words. It's because the family ran a funeral home.
Right.
And so then a couple of people looked at this, and that's the miraculous part to me. A couple of people looked at this and say, oh, this should be a musical.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, if you read the graphic novel, the last thing that would have been in my head was, let's turn this into a musical.
Right.
You know, but they did, and it's, you know.
It was very good.
Yeah, it won the Tony Award a few years back.
Do you miss the nice thing about that? It was local.
Yeah, because it was nice. There's not as much professional work locally.
Right.
And once you become part of the union, of course, then you have to work within union jobs. And so a lot of theaters in the area are amateur, so they don't have union contracts. And so that's the reason. You know, well, if I were to work in like a theater that's not union and not, I'd have to give up my union status and I'm not prepared to do that at this point. You know,
I can imagine
not at this point, but I mean, there might be a time where I feel like I'm retired. I want to stay here and I'll do whatever theater's around and just not worry about it. But
well, it is one of the downsides of living here at the beach is that we don't have a lot of I was pointing out one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's.
I wasn't contradicting you. I was just saying, there's not many, but that is one.
Well, we got Possum Point, and you've been involved with those guys before.
Yeah, that's sort of where I got back into theater. Like when we moved down here and I was teaching down here, I had been into theater, you know, years before that. And then Jack Daniels and I had a little time together. And then
Jack.
And I didn't do a whole lot then. All the drama was in my head. You know, and then, I started doing community theater around here, both with Second Street in Milford and at Possum Point in Georgetown. And it just, you know, it just bit me the bug. I was like, and I had enough years sober that I started to wanted to try things and take risks and good risks, you know, not bad risks.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I've always wanted to do this professionally, so why not try to? And so, you know, it's worked out that I was able to do a lot.
Well, whether it's in theater, running, sobriety, I mean, it's always about trying to, maybe not trying, but ending up sort of being like a good example. You know, people see what you're doing. I remember when I first got sober and we became friends, I was like, I've never had a friend that's like a doctorate or doctor. I call you the doctor. But, you know, I've never had a friend that's, you know, achieve so much in life. All my friends prior to getting sober were basically, you know, kind of crummy. So I remember it was nice for me to want to try to get sober. It felt good to have, you know, better relationships with people that were doing more things than I was used to. And, you know, I think the way that you live and the way you were running, I think you were a great example to me. It helped me want to be better. I think we see it now, like with the way, you know, 20 years of running, people are always saying, you guys out there still running, I want to come run with you guys. And now we're starting to get a few people wanting to run with us.
Well, mostly with you. You seem to connect with everybody more so than I do. See more people, I think, than I do.
Well,
I'm a little more in my bubble.
I met Brian because I bought the kids' bikes. So
yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, like you have got kids and my kid, you know, is grown. So
right.
You get out there in the world a little more in some ways than I do.
Well, and I'm sure people always say, I need to get out there and run with you one day. I just happen to make them do it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You're like, I always believe that they don't really mean it, I guess, that they're just saying that, you know. Because I remember saying that, you know, I got to do that, you know.
Well, I like to try to be that bridge, you know. And that's what this podcast this podcast started was... You know, and I use the example of our boy, you know, Matt. And, you know, I used to say, oh, I'm so sick of this job, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, listen, do you want to open a salon or not? Because if you do, let's do it. If you don't, shut up.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I do. Phone calls were made. All of a sudden, the next thing you know, I'm meeting with people. And the next thing you know, I have a salon kind of. I had to jump that gap. And... You know, there's people out there that would like to run. There's people out there that, you know, maybe wonder about what sobriety might be like. There's people out there that, you know, I would say 50-50 people think that they could probably be a decent actor or at least maybe work in, you know, a theater or a local theater. So it's trying to be an example. And when they do want to make that step across that gap, you know, to have your hand out.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think you're absolutely right, you know, that's a great thing to be able to have your hand out, as you say.
Right.
It's what I hope that I, you know, I have a student right now who told me that she wants to be an English professor, you know, so it's my responsibility to be there and help her with that, and if that's what she'd like to do, and talk to her about it, you know, and
maybe she's been inspired by you up to this point. Maybe.
Well, she said it actually. I didn't say that part, but she did in this message. Well, exactly. I mean, I think that's the thing. If you focus on, you know, when Matt and I used to talk, I remember one of the things that that I said to him one day and that we used to repeat all the time is that everything feeds everything else, you know? And so that, like, you know, if you're doing good in one area, it feeds your desire to do good in another area, and it feeds, you know, and so that all these things are related to one another. There's no thing that I can try. If I'm trying it out of good motives, there's no thing that I can try that's not going to be good in some way.
Right.
I may end up not having the time. Like, you know, I have a violin at home I haven't picked up in a half a year, you know, and I can play a little bit. I had lessons when I was a kid, and I like to play, but, you know, there's just not time to do everything, you know, but I still try to pick it up, you know, and play every now and then because I feel like it's connected to everything else, and it makes me feel good when I do it, and it reminds me of my mom and dad, and, you know, there's a lot of good aspects to it, you know, so I think you're right, but I think, yeah, you can't focus on trying to be an example for somebody. You know, it's like lecturing your kids, you know, right. Like, you can talk till you're blue in the face, but if you're not walking the walk, nobody's going to buy what you're selling anyway.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's like the best thing you can do for your kids is lecture by example, you know, by how you live your life and what you do, you know.
Well, and I brought that up because you said it's my responsibility. And I'm like, for me, when it becomes my responsibility, that's when I start to blunder it. It's like just living this life as you are.
Yeah, we can inspires over...
Yeah.
Yeah, we can overweight that idea of responsibility.
Right. So know? I'm like, you clearly were doing awesome prior to thinking it was your responsibility. That's what inspired her.
Yeah, but I think the first responsibility is to myself.
Absolutely.
Right? Am I doing my best work?
Right.
Am I showing up generously? And am I patient with the students I'm working with? And that was something that really came to the forefront during the pandemic, because one of the things that, like, I overtly committed to was flexibility, patience, communication. And that's what I just said to my students over and over again. The only way we're going to get through this is flexibility, patience, and communication. And so I had to live that too. I had to be flexible with them. I had to communicate with them as much as I could. And I had to be patient when things went bad, you know, because they're confronting a lot of stuff that I don't understand. But then I suddenly realized, I don't know that I've done this well prior to this. I think I've not, as a teacher, I think I could have been better. Why does it take pandemic for me to emphasize those? Those are always the key elements.
Well, what's the term? We stop changing when the pain stops?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, you know, it's like being a parent.
I don't like to think that I'm pain driven still, though. You know what I mean? I used to be motivated solely by pain. It was only when there was enough pain buildup that I would actually move and do something.
Well, uncomfortable.
Yeah, uncomfortable is better. Yeah, I don't wait for pain as much anymore. And I get uncomfortable quicker
right now,
too. I think that's just because of better conscious living, paying attention to a spiritual life, paying attention to a physical well-being. You know, those things that we've learned to concentrate on, that your emotional life matters, that your spiritual life matters, that everything feeds everything else. They're all connected.
Yeah. Well, and I know even in the hair business, I like to try to keep a clean salon, but, you know, I wasn't wiping down my station between clients prior to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could probably have done better. Not that we're a super spreading event prior to this, but
right.
but now.
No, at the consciousness level about it, you're like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of germs around there, right? That's not a bad practice.
Well, when
you've
got a client sitting there waiting between clients, and I'm like, is she going to wonder if I'm going to wipe this down? I need to wipe this. It's a pain.
sure.
But, you know, different events create different situations. I know for me, and I know a lot of other people, you know, Carlos and other, you know, people with kind of young kids, you know, I feel like I'm dropping the ball, you know, because what we're dealing with right now is, like, you know, our kids are doing like an online school for an hour or something, especially the little ones, and then I really don't have a lot for them. I don't have the energy to sit there and spend another 4 hours doing my own version of school.
I hear you.
It's so, and then at the end of the day, I'm like, God, am I being a good parent? Am I lazy?
It's really kept me from complaining a lot. You know, like, I don't complain a whole lot in this because I've got it pretty easy. I don't have that situation. You know, like, I have a colleague who, he's teaching classes online, and he has 5 kids at home, and, you know, 2 of them are teenagers, and the other 3 are online. His wife kind of put her work on hold so she could be home to sort of marshal all that, you know.
Yep.
And they, you know, they worked it out. But I got off a video conference with him because we were talking about his dossier and getting it ready for a review that he has coming up. And I turned to Anne and I was like, I'm not complaining the rest of the day.
No.
You know, I mean, I've got it cushy. I've got it easy by comparison.
Well, but you know? But we could also look at it as like, it's like running. It's a little bit of suffering, but when you get through it, you're like, wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Like I, and it's just things, like I've had these small revelations during it, you know, that it's things I make a big deal out of are not a big deal. Like I was running day before yesterday, and I just turned my grades in. And or I was just about to. I had a few more things to grade, and I was going to turn my grades in, right? I had about 4 papers left to grade, and I was waiting on one that I'd given an extension to. And this other student whose paper I had graded, right, she texts me in the second mile of my run, and she's like, are you going to post the final grades on this learning platform, this learning management system called Canvas? And so I was like, oh, this text in the middle of my run, you know, and I'm listening to a book as I'm running. I'm having a good time. I just got out of the house. I've been grading all morning. But you know what? I stopped and I responded to the text because I'm like, I suddenly put myself in her position, right? Mm. She's anxious about the grade. She wants to know if she passed and if everything went okay, you know. And so I'm like, well, I don't post them on Canvas. I post them over here. They'll be up by the end of the day. She goes, and she's like, do you think I got that? And I'm like, I'm sure you did because I had actually looked at it, you know. But it like made such a difference to her. It wasn't that big a deal for me to stop for a few minutes to like. But in the past, I would have looked at that, and you know, if it wasn't pandemic, I would have been like, "Come on, you know, I'm gonna put." You know, I would have just run.
This is my time.
Exactly, and it didn't matter that much, you know. And then I got to feel good about how good she felt,
right?
You know, to get that feedback, and I thought, man, I still got plenty to learn. You know, I got plenty to learn, and this thing has been teaching me a lot. And I, you know, consistently, I have a kind of work that I have been able to keep doing. That alone, there's so many people out there who don't have the
one of the mysteries.
One
of the
situation.
One of the mysteries of like getting sober. I call it, you know, I got sober, but I almost like being reborn, like the person that I was prior.
You have to die to the old self.
Well, and then a word popped up early in my sobriety: the word rightly, and I was like, can you say that? Is that the right way to say
it? Sounds weird when you first say it.
I think that's a mistake. But
the
first, no, it's not. And it's when I learned about this, it was a real revelation for me because, and I always use the example, when I first got sober, I was like, I'm so awesome. I'm so great.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Right. I'm so freaking
you want
great
credit
right
for it.
I would say if
credit
you live,
for living like a halfway decent life that everybody else lives without credit.
I'm like, if you live in the manure long enough and you come out, you think the air is from heaven, right?
Right.
Same with me. So here I come. I'm amazing. And I remember going to Giant and getting my groceries and taking the cart and, you know, taking it down to my car, putting the groceries in. And I'm like, I'm amazing now. So I'm going to take this cart, not to the little holder.
All the way back to the
all
store.
All the way back to the store. And I did that for a while thinking I was amazing.
Yeah.
But then understanding that word rightly showed up. Are you doing that rightly? And I was like, well, what does that mean? And then when I would go back and look at it, I remember how much my head was swiveling,
like
making sure
everybody's
noticing
this?
How freaking awesome I am. And I was like, well, that's really defeating the purpose, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, stopping and answering a text and realizing how amazing that is, you know, and learning words like rightly and just how...
Well, and just letting the thing be its own reward.
Right.
And not looking for a pat on the back or an attaboy from somebody, you know, or approval from somebody for it. It's really, 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 really hard.
Well, and then when you understand what you are doing,
yeah.
to continue doing it, but doing it rightly.
Yeah.
And,
no, exactly. You know, and that doing it without going, now I deserve my major award. You know.
Well, my new thing is now I grab a cart from the cart holder out in the parking lot,
uh-huh.
and I take it all the way in and use it there. I don't take one at the store because, but I'm not. I'm trying to do it rightly.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny. There's a lot of little cool things that, for me, and you know, sobriety people, you know, drink. We solved that problem on the first day, right? The drinking problem. Because that once the first day, you know, and depending on whoever's your story.
I mean, we solve it every morning by making that same decision. But yes, I hear what you're saying.
We stop, know, if I have a drinking problem and I quit drinking and get sober, I've solved that problem immediately.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, it's hard to stick around because we fixed it. It's to work on the rightly part, the other stuff.
Yeah.
And but sticking through it, hanging in there. Meeting people like you, Scott, and, you know, our boy Matt. I'll never forget, as much as our boy Matt had it together, And he had it together, right? I mean, he had it together.
He had a lot of it together.
And I remember he called me one day. He's like, can you come over? And I was like, sure. Went over and he's like, you know, he's upstairs in his house and he's picking ties in white shirts, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, can we go for a walk? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. We've never had walked.
When did he wear a tie? I can't even remember when he wore a tie.
Stay with me here. And so we go for a walk and he's like, he goes, in 4 hours, I'm going to go receive the James Beard Humanitarian of the Year Award in New York City. And right now, I'm consumed with the thought that they're going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Not you. I could see me worrying about this, but not you. And but it's just, you know, it's these little things that show up.
Well, he worried about that kind of stuff a lot, too, because, you know, he'd kind of screwed college when he was in it because he was drinking, you know, and mm-hmm. he had football scholarship at JMU, and he, you know, he's watching practice from the hill,
yeah.
you know, above it. And I remember him telling that story, and the coach came up and said, you're going to practice? And he's like, nah, I don't think so, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I think that he felt the, you know, he felt inadequacy as a result of that. He felt like other people were going to judge him and stuff. And I think we all have those kind of things. You know, I call it, you know, the charlatan syndrome, you know, that I feel like, you know, I don't deserve to be here and everybody's going to figure it out.
But do we just stop looking at the proof? Do we just shut our eyes and just put blinders on and just...
Well, I think we stop. Yeah, in a sense, I think... I stopped giving the proof power, you know, because it's not proof of anything. It's just some measuring stick that I think I ought to measure myself by. And you know, as the old saying goes, the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the doing. Mm. You know, we're not human doings. We're human beings. You just got to be there, you know. And it's like, you know, live your life.
Beings having a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
No, spiritual being having a human experience.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that's the one. But I mean, like, you know, it's I think, you know, like you and I have talked before, and I know that you weren't crazy about school, right? But I think that you're...
I was too smart for school.
Well, but I think that, you know, that you have a really great intelligence. Do you know what I mean? And I think that, like, the whole doctorate thing and all that, where it's all a bunch of nonsense anyway, you know? I mean, there's an old joke about PhD just stands for piled higher and deeper.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, like your eye for composition and color, like, when you take pictures and everything, you've got a lot of talents, you know? And it's like, you have to be willing to look at, you know, where are my talents, and then not get overly impressed with oneself, right?
Right.
You know? At the same time, it's like, it's just, you know, for me, it's like, it's just acting, you know, it's just,
well,
I get a chance to pretend to be somebody else for a while, and it's fun.
I think the point of the doctor thing was that I was at such a place in my life, I was at such a low point, I wasn't hanging out with doctors.
I know what you mean. I know, like, and the, you know, the organization in which we got sober has a miraculous kind of effect, because it has this... There's a bunch of drowning people just got in the boat together, you know, and they're from all different areas, and suddenly you realize all that nonsense doesn't matter when it's life and death, right. You know, that's just nonsense, and that everybody has interest and value, and, you know, I mean, it's one of the blessings of that kind of a fellowship, and I think any kind of fellowship, like a congregation in a church has that as well, you know, because people come together based on faith. And in a sense, that's what happens in that fellowship too, right?
Right.
You have the faith that if I hang with these people, I don't have to die drunk,
right.
You know? And it's like, you know, if I go to a church, I can hang with these people and I don't have to die an asshole, you know?
Right.
But you meet people from different walks of life with different occupations, and you realize, you know, on certain fundamental levels, we're the same. Mm-hmm. And I think they're awesome, and I enjoy them, and you know, I wouldn't have gotten to know them otherwise.
Right.
And what a loss that would be.
Wow.
Because you get in your bubble, you know.
Yeah. Well, we are, I mean, I know I'm very blessed. And you know, as we come up on Christmas and this year, I mean, I hear it all the time. You know, I hope next year's better. I hope next year's better. Yeah. 2020's been the worst year. Beside the dying part, you know, and I lost my mom this year. My mom passed away. I don't think it was from COVID.
Grandma Jean.
Grandma Jean, love you. But that seems to be, oh. But besides a couple things, big things,
yeah,
I don't find this to be the worst year. I feel like it's been a chance for me to, I guess what my question is we you put know, a lot of happiness, we make this line that we try to achieve happiness, and it's usually with either, you know, career or money. Mm-hmm. And when these two things start to disappear, all of a sudden happiness is gone.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that that's fair. I don't think it's fair to people to have it that simple and not have you mentioned the word patience. I feel like you mentioned three words. I know patience was one of them. I don't feel like they all came at the same time, but I feel like patience has just shown up because I'm having to be patient with, you know, not everybody thinks like I think. Not everybody is all bullshit, right? Exactly. Yeah. I don't feel it's all bullshit, but there's been times where I'm like, this is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, being patient, but redefining happiness.
Yeah.
I think this has been the year. If you take it an opportunity to try and look at it, there is an opportunity to try to redefine happiness.
Yeah. You know, Shakespeare's Hamlet has this scene in which he's talking to two old college friends of his, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and he says, he's talking about his own feelings at the moment, and he's, you know, he's in a kind of melancholic, difficult state, and he says, Denmark's a prison. He's the prince of Denmark, and he says, Denmark's a prison. And one of these friends says, we think not so, my lord. And he says, why then, 'tis not so to thee. Because there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And I think, you know, there's Shakespeare's genius, you know, is that idea that, you know, it's all a matter of how we are willing to look at it and think about it and talk about it, right? I mean, I don't rehearse that 2020 has been a horrible year.
Right.
Because for me, that kind of rehearsal reinforces it. You know, then all I think of is 2020 is horrible. But there's been a lot of great things in 2020 and a lot of people working under this pressure who have shown terrific humanity and generosity. And, you know, I mean, it's also, you know, it's an opportunity disguised as an obstacle, you know, yeah, in a lot of ways that, you know, it's an opportunity to be better and to do good things and to notice the good.
Well, and I even remember you when this first started, you're like, I'm going to have to try to figure out how to learn how to do remote learning and video.
Yeah, and it was stressful.
And here you are, you've kind of come through it and you've become a better person maybe in that.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little more patient, you know, you stopping and answering texts while it runs. I mean, tons of improvement there, right?
Right.
So it's been, besides the dying.
Yeah.
The dying has not been good. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with anybody that lost anybody through this.
Some people have been through some really hard things. And that's what I mean, too. It's like I try to look at my own situation comparatively, and I think, man, I've been very fortunate in this. You know, there's some people struggling with real fears and real loss, and I haven't had to struggle with that, you know. So it's always like,
do you think it's important to, this is always an, do you think it's important to obviously understand about being in fear, but do you think, how important is it to understand why?
Well,
because I use that, you know, that I, you know, I hate Mr. Jones. You know, that example.
Yeah,
you
know,
it's,
I know,
like,
the example you're talking about.
And it's like, is it something I'm not getting? Is it something I'm being inconvenienced? Or is there really something to be afraid of? Because I will say this is for me one of the gifts, because this has nothing to do with drinking. This is one of the gifts that I've gotten out of that program, is that I've learned it's okay that I'm mad, mm-hmm, as long as I don't understand why.
Yeah, and anger usually comes from fear for me, you know, and it's like that old reading of the word fear, right? You know, false evidence appearing real.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of times that's the case, you know. I mean, a fear is a good human trait because it keeps us safe a lot of the time, but it also can be bad in that if when we overfocus on it, it can keep us sick and keep us away from trying things,
right,
from taking risks, from stepping outside of that. And, you know, outside the comfort zone is where I grow. You know, I don't grow in my comfort zone. It's like somebody said to me once, you know, when I was early on in sobriety, they said, hey, you know, you build the wings on the way down. You know, it's like as you're falling, it feels like you're falling, you're flapping like crazy. That's where you build the strength, you know, and you learn to fly a little bit. But, it's you know, I mean, I think fear, for me, it comes back to, and this isn't, you know, my insight by any means, you know, some pretty basic threats, you know, that some instinct of mine is being threatened. And, you know, a lot of times it's reduced to I'm either going to lose something I have or not get something I want, which is pretty good. I mean, if that's you want to take it down to basic, that's pretty good. If I can
dumb
look
it
at
down.
Fear and go, yeah, dumb it down and just say, is this about that I'm afraid of losing something that I have? You know, I'm afraid my wife doesn't love me anymore. I'm afraid, you know, like I'm afraid of losing some security that I have. Or is it about I'm not going to get what I want? I think I deserve that promotion over somebody else, and they, you know, like I'm worried I'm not going to. Yeah, I think it's, you know,
well,
if I can take it down to that, then maybe I can get some perspective on it. And I don't know that I can get rid of the fear, but I can at least maybe.
I think you can absolutely get rid of the fear, because I mean,
you can laugh at it, you can get rid of it.
I always say my only problem is things that are inconveniencing me. And that those usually me getting something or not getting something usually fall under that. And that's fine. I can say, damn it, I still want it. But at least I understand why I'm like really annoyed. Instead of this blind, I'm annoyed and I don't care and I don't know why, but I'm going to smash stuff and be upset. And
right.
It's like, well, I think you're just not getting what you want. Oh, okay. Well, I'm still going to smash them. And that's a choice, you know, we decide. Luckily for me, I'd be like, all right, I need to calm down a second. But,
yeah.
You know, it is a gift about trying to prevent myself or prevent us. We try to prevent ourselves from maybe one day thinking maybe a drink might be a good idea.
Yeah.
And that's whether it's a drink or a donut. Or
right,
too much,
I mean,
spending
too
much money.
You know, but I can survive the donut. I can't survive the drink. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't believe I can survive it. I don't have another recovery in me.
No.
That's what I'm worried about. I mean, I might, but I'm not ready to spin that wheel.
I wish I believed I couldn't survive the donut.
No, I'm with you on that.
Because, damn it,
I'm with you on that.
I'm actually all right. My latest downfall right now is the freaking Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Oh, I left the house this morning. I finished, like, I was supposed to, you know, I'm not supposed, I wasn't worrying about fasting. I do this intermittent fasting, but I kind of took a break from it until New Year's. I'm going to start fresh again. But just the last, you know, the end of the semester with grading, I'm just like, I'm not going to focus on that. But I still sort of do it kind of naturally. And I got in from my walk today, and I grabbed a coffee to come over here. And then my sister-in-law had sent these little chocolate Santas from Pittsburgh, this candy maker in Pittsburgh. Yeah, and so I grabbed three of them from the bowl with my coffee, you know, and my wife is standing there. And then I was heading out the door, and I said, I better eat a banana, too. And she goes, yeah, the banana would be is a better choice than those. And I said, I wasn't asking for anybody's opinion. You know what I mean? I'm like, and there it is. I'm heading out the door, and I couldn't just leave it. I had to say something nasty, you know. And it's like, I'm sorry. I love you. I'll see you later. You know, but it's like,
because
I got threatened in that moment. I'm like, she's telling me what I already know is true. I shouldn't be eating chocolate as the first thing I'm eating today, you know.
You shouldn't have said it out loud.
I know, I should have just done it.
Well,
then I want to be a sneak thief. You know, I want to like turn my wife into my mommy and sneak around and do these, you know, it's like, that's not good either. You know what I mean?
And,
like, I'm a grown ass man.
That's a great thing you brought up there, is really the ability to listen.
What'd you say?
Well, that was one of the things one of the big things that I learned about me. Is how, and this doesn't really have anything to do, only the listening part, not about your conversation, but how uncomfortable I was with listening and not giving a reply, like advice or my point. And I remember somebody confiding in me to listen, and I remember giving an opinion, and they said to me, I didn't tell you that to get an opinion. I just needed to share that.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, and I shrunk down to about an inch tall, and it was a real insight and an eye-opening moment for me to realize is that I tend to make things about me, and some people just like, and I think that we're going through this right now, is some people just want to get it off their chest.
Want to vent a little
bit, and it's important sometimes that we can listen, right?
I think so, you know, and it's a tough one for me too, and
because we're experts.
Yeah. And I like to appear like I'm on top of things and I know what I'm talking about. And I also think that as males in our culture, we're conditioned to solve things. We're told that we're supposed to solve things.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody brings us something like that, we want to give them a solution. And a lot of times they're just, you know, I'm just letting you know what's happening,
right.
You know. And it tends to be women who are better listeners very often because they're not looking to, they understand emotional support. They understand that. This person's just looking for me to say yes and nod and say, I hear you, you know, you're being heard. And so, I've been trying to practice it in, and I'm not very good at it, But in faculty meetings and meetings at work, I'm like, all right, you don't need to say anything now. You don't. Just zip it. You don't need to. Nobody needs to hear from you on this.
Well, you know what a great response is that my wife does. She goes, "That happens sometimes."
That's good. That's a good neutral response. Yeah.
Happens sometimes.
That happens sometimes. That's life. It happens sometimes.
This happens. No. See, we're it's not that. We just say that happens sometimes.
Yeah. But it's. I mean, it comes down to just. Well, that's life. Yeah.
You get to give a little response. Exactly. You get a little. Yeah. But you.
But it's
nothing.
Also, yeah, and it also doesn't, like, it doesn't stroke your ego. It's like, that happens sometimes to everybody.
She doesn't say that.
No, but the to everybody is silent, but it's back there. You know what I mean? It's like, that happens sometimes. You know, it's just part of living, and yeah, me, I.
You can even go right down to just happens.
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 Happens. I have a feeling this is going to become our new watchword. Happens.
Happens. Shit happens. Well, listen, man, thank you.
Thank you. It's been good.
Merry Christmas.
I'm looking forward to sitting down and having a chat with you. I've been so busy with all the grading lately, so it's nice to not have that and to be able to just sit down and have coffee with my buddy and a little chat.
Well,
little
we get to
holiday
chat.
Holiday cheer.
We have some great chats.
We do.
It's. I've grown.
We get into it.
I don't say that you're the reason I'm sober, but you're the reason that sobriety's been a little better. And I appreciate
Same's
that.
Same's true for me.
And I hope you have a great Christmas. And I know,
same to you.
Like I said, I wiped everything down. I know your grandson's coming down, and I hope you have an amazing time
Thanks.
Hanging out with him.
Yeah,
and,
it's gonna be good to have a week with a 6-year-old.
Yeah,
I'll probably be very happy to give him back in 2021.
Patience.
Yeah. I told you I don't pray for patience anymore.
No,
because I get too many opportunities to practice it then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well.
All right.
I appreciate it. Hopefully, we'll get you back another time.
Yep.
This makes two. You've been here before.
I know, I have.
All right, brother.
All right, man.
Happy birthday.
Happy
Merry Christmas.
Happy birthday. Merry Christmas. Happy anniversary.
Bye-bye.
Bye.